Hey there, Rick Singeri of Vermont Edition. Just want you to know this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Let me take you back 50 years. Not that long ago, really, but the interstate highway system in Vermont was still being built. The oldest sections of roads were just a decade old, and some wouldn't be completed for another couple of decades. Nevertheless, the creation of Interstates 91 and 89 had a large impact on the state. Not only could Vermonters travel farther and faster, changing commerce within the state, but other people could come here too, tourists, and goods could arrive, new people potentially to live here. There were growing concerns that an influx of people could irreparably change the fabric of Vermont's culture and landscape. So in the spring of 1969, then-Governor Dean Davis established a commission to look at how the state might enact some kind of planning and environmental controls to limit sprawl and big development. The Governor's Commission on Environmental Control took a year to look at the issue, holding hearings around the state and coming up with recommendations for several new laws, including a statewide set of regulations and rules for big developments. That resulting law, passed by the legislature in 1970, was Act 250. And it's been such a big deal that it's still known by its number. Mention Act 250 and you'll get a variety of opinions, ranging from great appreciation for a law that has protected Vermont's pastoral landscape and areas of environmental concern, to great frustration over a program that can stymie or delay building projects. And a lot of people have mixed feelings. As Act 250 is nearing the 50-year mark, it's probably time for a tune-up. And a new commission is looking at ways to amend the land use and development program to make sure it works for the 21st century. Today on the show, we're going to talk with the chair of the commission about what kinds of things are being considered. And we'll hear from two advisors, one on the environmental side of things and one who represents developers. They're not as far apart as you might suspect. Joining us first is Amy Sheldon, Middlebury State Representative and chair of the Commission on Act 250. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jane.
So what have you learned about the history of Act 250 that you didn't know before you started this process?
What have I learned that I didn't know? I knew a lot when I started, but I think what I've learned is how really forward-thinking it was and how the Gibb Commission had they laid the groundwork for the vision that we all share today as Vermonters around our landscape, gave us a set of values that we can, and then a vocabulary, a vision, values, and vocabulary for how we talk about this place that we love, that we call home, and that we want to be good stewards of.
You think the state would have looked different without Act 250 passing in 1970?
I do think so. I mean, I think what's important to think about when you're looking at the history of Act 250 is that it really grew out of citizen concerns around large-scale developments that were being built and proposed to be built in the southern part of the state around our ski areas. And at that time, there was very little to almost no environmental regulation, and there was a really big concern for the environmental impacts of those developments.
Can you explain, I know we could do a whole show just on the process of Act 250, and we've done them, but can you explain, broadly speaking, how Act 250 works, what it actually does, and how someone has to go through the process?
Sure. So one of the things that I think is remarkable about Act 250 is that it did grow out of citizen concerns, and it's based in a citizen-led process, and it's regionally based. So we have 9 district commissions, and each commission has 3 citizen members appointed by the governor. And broadly, there are 10 criteria, which have ebbed and flowed but mostly grown over the years to somewhere around 30, that look at holistically at the costs of large-scale development to a local community. It's a process that you could do a major application or what's called a minor application, and that requires a jurisdictional opinion. But broadly, that's what it takes. And you go as a sort of a hearing type of setting, and you present your proposal, and citizens hear the proposal as commissioners, but also can participate in the process if they're concerned about the development.
How big does the development have to be before it triggers the Act 250 process?
So the jurisdictional threshold depends. And so if you are a town with planning and zoning and subdivision bylaws, you're called a 10-acre town, and if you are not, you are considered a 1-acre town. And those are the two big buckets, but jurisdiction kind of can shift within that also. It's pretty detailed.
So a 1-acre town would be if you're having a 1-acre development, that would trigger the process.
Impacting 1 acre.
And you mentioned some of the things that the law is designed to look at, and I'm going to read a few of the things on the list just so that people have a sense. Act 250 considers the development's effect on necessary wildlife habitat, town and regional growth, primary agricultural soils, municipalities and governmental services, historic and archaeological sites, energy and water conservation, and on down wetlands, floodways, forest soils, transportation, aesthetics. I mean, that's a huge list to be considering when you have potentially a 1-acre development. Is it onerous?
Is it? It doesn't have to be onerous. 98% of developments that go through the Act 250 process are approved. And I think what's happened is we have a development community that's grown up with this framework, and so they tend to understand it and propose developments that meet the criteria.
So most developments are approved.
By far, most developments are approved. And I think since we're talking about this, it's also important to note that most developments don't trigger Act 250.
How long does it typically take to go through the process, including appeals?
It depends. And we're actually working on getting specific numbers from the Natural Resources Board, which is the agency that oversees the administration of Act 250. But I want to say that most are under 60 days.
Under 60 days. That's a lot shorter than seems like when you hear about it.
Yes.
We're talking with Amy Sheldon, who's a Middlebury State Representative and chair of the Commission on Act 250, which is looking at ways to sort of upgrade the law and the program to make sure that it works for the next 50 years. And Representative Sheldon, if this has been such a successful program, why does it need an upgrade? Why do we need a new commission almost 50 years on to think about how to do this or change it and make it do it better?
Right. So Act 250 was really forward thinking when it passed, but we weren't talking about climate change. We didn't understand the importance of our large forested areas and the connectivity that wildlife needed. So habitat fragmentation wasn't on the books. We've also, in the intervening years, created another, parallel or complementary, actually, regulatory process through the Agency of Natural Resources permitting. We have developed regional and municipal planning. And so there's just been a lot of big things changing that also work towards meeting the goals of Act 250. So we want to take this moment to make sure that we're looking to the future to address climate change in all of its aspects. And you could put protecting wildlife habitat into that same bucket of climate change, I think, and also integrating it so that it is as efficient and predictable. That's what the regulated community, the folks who apply for the permits, want us to do also in this charge. So we have four main things that we're looking at. And we're looking at really are the roots of the law still relevant, the goals and the findings that the original legislature put into statute. And really, I think there's agreement that they are still very much relevant to who we are today as a state. We're looking at issues on criteria, so updating the criteria to address some of those things I just mentioned. And we're also looking at jurisdiction, noting that the vast majority of development does not undergo Act 250 review. And then finally, we're looking at the administration of the law and trying to make that smoother, improve it.
And how are you doing that? I mean, this legislative commission is made up of legislators, but you have a lot of advisors who come from different constituencies and can represent different aspects of how the law works or how people have to go through it. So what else are you doing besides just hearing from them?
So we have a 6-member legislative commission, 3 from the House, 3 from the Senate, 14 advisors, and we're doing a 3-phase process. The 14 advisors all have some level of expertise around using Act 250, and we spent last fall, 18 months ago, I guess, we started hearing from them. What were their concerns? What were their issues? We went into a little bit of recess during the session, but we did have subcommittees looking at in-depth at the subject areas that we're exploring. This past summer, we went into a pretty deep public outreach process where we held 6 forums around the state and had an online survey, and we still have an open portal for citizens to give us comments even through to today. And now we're in the report writing and recommendations phase. We've gathered specific recommendations and we're still gathering recommendations. I got some last night on how it is that we can address these issues that have come up.
And you may get some more today after this program.
I expect we will.
And that's okay.
And that's great.
We'll put a link to that portal at vpr.net if you click on today's Vermont edition and you'd like to make sure that you your voice is heard. But let's talk to another voice here while we're having this conversation. Warren Coleman is an attorney and lobbyist at MMR Legal Services, and he represents the interests of developers, including one of the biggest names in real estate in Vermont, Ernie Pomerleau of Pomerleau Real Estate. Now, Ernie Pomerleau is one of the advisors to this commission, and Warren Coleman is here to talk with us today. Nice to have you on the program, Warren.
Thanks, Jane. I'm happy to be here.
So Ernie told us that he likes the law, partly because it's made it more difficult for big out-of-state real estate developers to come in and do these big projects and sort of undercut local developers. But he does want to see something streamlined. Do you think most developers share that assessment?
I think they do. I think, as Amy said, most folks who have been doing business here in Vermont have grown up with Act 250. And if they've been successful, they've learned how to work with it. And how to navigate it, but we also need to take stock and see if we can update some aspects of it.
So, what aspects would you like to see updated?
Well, there's a few, and I would say I think you noted at the outset that I think people are probably not as far apart as you might suspect, coming from the development community and coming from the environmental advocacy community. But a couple examples to start out with are. We're trying to encourage development in downtowns and designated areas, and those are areas we've got more dense development. And one really good way to encourage that is to not basically add on additional, review through Act 250. So I think there's some collaboration coming together around the idea of making sure that we do a good job of designated areas where we want growth. And making sure we do the environmental review through that designation process, and then relax the standards or need for review through Act 250 because you've front-loaded basically that process. So I think there's a lot of general agreement around that. The other area, one that's sort of near and dear to my heart because my previous career was at the Agency of Natural Resources, so I have a long history as a regulator, and this was also pointed out earlier. Our environmental regulatory structure through the Agency of Natural Resources is very robust, very technically sound, and that didn't really exist, 30, 40 years ago. We didn't have stormwater permitting. We didn't have the wastewater and water supply permitting. We didn't have the wetlands permitting programs that we have now at Agency of Natural Resources. So a lot of the environmental protections that were needed through Act 250 really have been taken up by the Agency of Natural Resources regulatory process and permitting. So there, in my mind, I think there's a lot of duplication or potential for duplication by reviewing projects at the Act 250 level that have gone through and received permits for various environmental aspects of that development through the Agency of Natural Resources. So I think there's significant room for streamlining, should we say, if you've received an Act 250 permit for stormwater or for wetlands. That should take care of it. And on the other side, there's probably areas that we'll talk about where Act 250 should shift its focus. Amy mentioned one of those dealing with forest fragmentation and habitat connectivity. So I think there's room for streamlining, and there's also room for refocusing Act 250.
Well, Representative Sheldon, you mentioned the A&R process too, and Warren Coleman is talking about this sort of side-by-side process for people who are going to have to get special permitting from the Agency of Natural Resources to deal with, wetlands, building on a wetland or something like that. And then that's part of the Act 250 process as well. So is there a way to streamline that? I mean, I read some of the other things that Act 250 looks at that don't have anything to do with wetlands, that have to do with aesthetics or with community planning or, historic and archaeological sites. So would there be a way to streamline the A&R and Act 250 processes to put them together in some way?
I think there is room for some streamlining. In fact, currently there's already work underway at the Agency of Natural Resources to do just that within their own permitting. And that's just getting rolled out. And so I think giving that time, it's going to include public notice and public engagement and a little bit more transparency with the public, which is one of the things that we hear from citizens about the benefits of Act 250 on, is that ability to really kind of know what's going on. I guess one of the things that pops into my mind I'm concerned about is Act 250 is very holistic, and when a community is evaluating a development from every angle, not just in silos, I think it's important to have kind of everything in the hopper to help put the – just paint the big picture of that development.
Could the A&R process be just part of Act 250 so that if you get the Act 250 permit, it's taken sort of as a given that A&R has sort of weighed in on that or has had a chance to be party to that, and so you wouldn't have to do that part of it?
So in that case, in that regard, it already is that way. And, you know, we've been asked to consider from the agency itself giving more deference to those permits. And that's something that we're talking about, but we haven't gotten to a decision on as a commission kind of where we would come in on it.
Warren Coleman, one of the other things that we hear about from developers sometimes is that, you know, Amy Sheldon said most of these applications go through in 60 days or less, and most of them, she thinks, and most of them are approved. So why does it have this reputation as being a program that can take forever to get through, that can really, you know, make developers just throw up their hands and say, forget it, this is taking too long, I'm not even going to bother?
I think there's two components to it. One occurs, I think, quite frankly, outside the Act 250 process, which is the need to acquire local and state approvals before you file an Act 250 application. So you may need, at the town level, to get various letters and approvals and have those in hand before you even file your Act 250 permit. And depending on where you are, what part of the state, there's really no time frame around those. And those, what I've heard from developers is actually that those local permitting processes can be the most time-consuming. And there is variation also, obviously, at the state level, getting permits from the Agency of Natural Resources. Most are done pretty timely, but there are ones that are complicated, and they take longer. And then getting up to the Act 250 process, you know, my experience, and I think consistent with most others, is the bigger, more complicated projects take longer. More people have interest in the projects. More people want to participate in the process, and they take longer. They take longer to review, and then you know the appeals process. And something that my job is to try and keep clients out of court and out of the appeals process. But that can also take a long time, and it really just depends on the complexity of the. Complexity of the issues depends on how litigious the parties are, and sometimes those can drag on for a long time. So it's hard to generalize. I think it really depends on from project to project. I think you see a handful of complex, controversial projects each year that take a long time, but by and large, other projects get reviewed and processed, and I think in a pretty timely manner.
Is there a change to the appeals process that developers are hoping to see in this come out of this commission?
Yeah, there's one, and I think it's actually a pretty simple one and pretty consistent, really, with how administrative law is practiced in other areas. Currently, when there's an appeal from the district commission to the Environmental Division of the Superior Court, it's done in a de novo fashion, which basically means that the court is looking at the matter fresh, you know, anew. And that requires somebody who just got an Act 250 permit to more or less start over in front of the court and demonstrate why their application should be approved again by the court, even though it was just approved by the district commission. The change we'd like to see is to sort of reverse that. If somebody appeals an Act 250 permit for the district commission, they should at least have the burden of making some showing to the court as to why that district commission Act 250 permit was not properly issued, why there was an error, before requiring the person, the permittee, to basically start over. So we're trying to. It would have the effect, hopefully, of making those people who have concerns about a project, one, play more of a role at the lower district commission level and put cards on the table and let a developer try and make adjustments to a project and not wait until you get up to the environmental division of the Superior Court and raise issues and basically make the permittee start all over again. So it's I think it also would make the process move more quickly if that was the case. So that's really the one basic one I think that we're interested in. I know there are lots of other ideas that are, I would say, far more extreme, but that's the one using the existing system that we'd like to talk about.
Warren Coleman is an attorney at MMR Legal Services, and he works on and lobbies on behalf of developers. Thank you for sharing your thoughts and the thoughts of the development community, although, of course, it's not a monolith. But, Warren, I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're taking a look at Act 250, Vermont's law around land use and permitting. A legislative commission is currently looking at ways to update the law as it nears the 50-year mark. And we're hearing from the commission chair, Representative Amy Sheldon of Middlebury. We've gotten a couple of questions and comments, Amy Sheldon, about an exemption or an exception to Act 250 permitting. And so I'm going to put them all together, and then we'll throw them to you. So Kay wrote in to say, we moved to Vermont because we felt Vermont's values coincided with our own. We care about the environment and a sustainable future, and we couldn't wait to move here in January of this past year. Well, here we are, not quite a year later, and waging a battle we never could have expected. There is an exemption of Act 250 that applies to many slate quarries. The exemption allows them to go back and request an area that had been previously quarried, so long as some vague paperwork was filed back in 1994. Coming from out of state, we would never have known this. So now we have a company attempting to come in and quarry 150 feet from our property line in an area that hasn't been quarried in almost 50 years. And Sarah says, I understand that there are industries that are grandfathered under Act 250 and therefore are not required to follow any guidelines that were just mentioned on the show, specifically companies that blast for slate. How is it that these companies are not held accountable to Act 250, and will this change under the current update? And before you answer, I'll get one more in here from Kimberly, who's calling in from West Paulette. Hi, Kimberly, go right ahead.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for giving me a chance to speak. I actually have a similar concern with the exemption. There's a company that wants to quarry right next to our property, and I am kind of sounding the alarm bells on this. The area has not been quarried in a number of years. It did considerable damage to the neighborhood the last time this happened, and nobody seems to be able to give us any answers. The town will not step in and stop it. The operators have told us they will not even guarantee to tell us when they plan on blasting. I have 3 young kids that play on this property, and they plan on using a horn. I find this outrageous. I mean, I came from New York, upstate, and I know that they have much stronger regulations. And coming to an area like Vermont that supposedly cares about the environment, I just want to know how this can possibly happen. I mean, I feel like I'm in the Industrial Revolution. These quarry operators are actually menacing my family. They are racing by my house. I mean, it puts a really bad taste in my mouth for the state.
Well, Kimberly, thanks for sharing your thoughts and concerns, and I can hear the alarm in your voice. So, Amy Sheldon, first of all, what's going on here with slate quarrying and the exemptions to Act 250? And then all three of our listeners have expressed concern that, you know, they're going to be impacted by this.
Right. So this current commission, we're just the current stewards of the Act 250 process, and that exemption did grandfather in slate quarries that registered by that certain date in the mid-90s. And it's obviously come to our attention that this is not necessarily a settled issue. So we're in the process of exploring. We spent our entire last meeting going through the list. This is not the only exemption. It's not the only area of conflict around exemptions that exists in the statute. This one, as you could tell, people are feeling very strongly about it right now. So we're in the process of educating ourselves about what do other states do. We're looking at New Hampshire's statute. Maybe we should look at New York's statute, as Kimberly suggested, and figure out how it is they regulate. I don't know the other Agency of Natural Resources permits that are also or that they also have to have, or if there are any, so I need to learn that myself. And, you know, finally, we're in the situation of trying to figure out what's fair to both parties, and that is our goal.
Why are there exemptions? I mean, if this is supposed to be a comprehensive law that really addresses things like sensitive habitats, and I mean, it wasn't really addressing climate change expressly, but addresses its land use. Why are there exemptions to industries like quarries, like slate quarrying?
Right. So there's the someone mentioned grandfathered. I think that's a better way of calling the slate quarry exemption. It was a pre-existing business before the statute change, and it's really common practice to create a grandfathered situation. We have been asked 50 years later why anyone would still be grandfathered in today. And then there are exemptions, and the exemptions were put into place more with the idea that perhaps the agricultural exemption or the forestry exemption, those were supporting the values that were espoused in the original intention of the statute. And so we exempted those practices because we valued the working landscape quite early on, and we saw that as a way of supporting it.
We heard earlier from a lobbyist who represents developers about how he hopes the law is changed. Let's get another voice in here now from Brian Shoup, Executive Director of the Vermont Natural Resources Council. Brian, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
So do you think there are ways to streamline the Act 250 process and make it easier for developers who are trying to make sure that they're in line with the rules to get them through that process more easily without taking away Act 250's power?
Well, there possibly. I think Representative Sheldon mentioned that the majority of Act 250 permits now are treated as a minor application, oftentimes not involving a hearing by the district commission. So, and the vast majority are approved. So, it is a relatively streamlined process now. I think conceptually, I agree with Warren Coleman that the designated areas might not need the same level of scrutiny. Provided, though, that there was a designation process that was accountable to the public and that front-loaded that natural resource protection that's accomplished through Act 250 now. So that's something that we're open to discussing and hope that the commission will take a hard look at it, recognizing, though, that the designation processes that we have now don't front-load that protection and they're not something that's really very accountable to the public.
So you are an advisor to this commission. What are you hoping or thinking from your perspective that could be addressed and changed in an updated Act 250?
Well, we've submitted several pages of recommendations that are all available on the commission's webpage, and they involved issues like taking a hard look at the designation process and making them work better as a way to consider changing the process in those areas, but also looking at the countryside. Representative Sheldon mentioned that the vast majority of development doesn't go through Act 250. That's especially true with regard to residential development, where we've done some analysis that showed that about 2% of all land subdivisions in the state, 2 or 3%, and that involves about 7 or 8% of all of the new residential building lots that are created are subject to Act 250. So over 90% of the residential development in the state, at least for single-family homes, isn't going through Act 250. And most of the multifamily development, or a larger percentage of that, are in those designated areas.
And you think that, what, smaller developments should be subject to Act 250, or that we need to find some way to address habitat fragmentation and sprawl, or what?
Exactly. Currently, as Representative Sheldon mentioned, the jurisdiction is a little complicated in certain areas, and there is some form of locational jurisdiction now. Any development above 2,500 feet, no matter what it is, triggers Act 250. And we've been discussing, and the commission has heard some presentations from from the Agency of Natural Resources and others, that with the level of mapping and kind of resource delineation that's available today, that maybe forest blocks, habitat connectivity should have a lower threshold for development in order to protect those areas.
So in looking at what else needs to be addressed, I mean, one of the biggest issues we're facing as a world right now, and certainly looking at it in Vermont, is climate change, too. So how could Act 250 tackle some of the questions that we're looking at around climate change?
There's several different ways. One, by looking at explicitly at emissions as part of the review process. Currently, Act 250 does look at air quality, so arguably emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, falls under their purview. Taking a look again at how Act 250 deals with energy, with making sites or ensuring that development is ready for renewable energy or incorporates it into the design, maximizes energy efficiency and energy conservation. Historically, Act 250 was pretty successful in kind of pushing the envelope on energy efficiency when the Department of Public Service was actively involved in most of the large Act 250 processes. So it does have a track record of promoting that, and I think through some additional tweaks, it might be able to do a better job at it.
Brian Shoup is Executive Director of the Vermont Natural Resources Council. Brian, thanks for sharing just a few of your thoughts with us. I appreciate it.
Sure, no problem.
We are talking today about Act 250 with Middlebury Representative Amy Sheldon, who chairs a legislative commission looking at changes that could be made to the law. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're looking at the history of Act 250, a much revered and sometimes reviled law in the state of Vermont. And we're talking with Amy Sheldon, a Middlebury representative and chair of the Commission on Act 250, a legislative commission that's looking at how to update the law for the next 50 or so years. And we've been looking at a little bit of what's in Act 250, how it works, and what might be changed in a new update to Act 250. James is calling in from Middlebury. Hi, James. What's your thought?
Hi. Representative Sheldon mentioned earlier that the original Act 250 exempted agriculture because it was a value that Vermonters wanted to support. But 50 years ago, I don't think the framers understood that agriculture or conventional agriculture was going to become the state's largest polluter. So, and that's where we are today. So my question is does Representative Sheldon feel that agriculture is going to be included in Act 250, or will it be continued to be exempted?
Representative Sheldon?
Yeah. Hi, James. Thanks for the question. We looked at, just to give a little bit of background where we are in this process, we looked at the exemptions at our last meeting, and this one did certainly come up. We spent a lot of time discussing it as a commission.
And you actually have a subcommittee on it, right, looking at the issue of agriculture?
We did have a subcommittee on it this past session, yeah. And we actually just went through the exemptions last meeting, and then we're going to have our council write up and then decide. But basically, the commission saw this issue in two different frames. One is, yes, we still value agriculture, and so in that regard, it probably does support the original intent of the act. And yes, we have a water quality problem, and the question is, had agriculture, I think James is exactly right, the folks who started Act 250 didn't foresee that agriculture was going to become as large a scale of an impact as it was. I would also put out there, though, that our regulated and developed lands also pollute. And as a nation, we've started our environmental regulations from the mindset of dilution is the solution. And it's really just now that we're realizing that it's no longer a solution. Our impact is much greater, and we actually need to, in all of our daily activities, all of us work towards kind of zero pollution as much as possible. So there's a number of pieces in play. The final piece is that we're already looking long and hard at, I mean, the required agricultural practices have just barely come online. And that, of course, is intended to reduce it. As far as James's final question of, are we going to consider bringing Act 250 jurisdiction in? It's really hard when something's been exempted to remove that exemption. But if we do move towards, say, more of a location-based or a protection of the state's critical resource areas, I could imagine that that might be a way of protecting water quality in our river corridors, for example, regardless of the use.
Act 250 is not the only way that developments are regulated. I mean, we're talking about this permitting process, but in something like agriculture, you mentioned the best agricultural practices and ways that farms and agricultural landscape is supposed to be managed. So do you see Act 250 working in conjunction with other laws and rules around the state? Or, I mean, it sometimes is seen as like, this is the only thing that we, the only tool that we have to use.
Right. So Act 250 is now, especially in a landscape of many places. And I actually think it's super important for us as we talk about potentially reducing, trying to get increased development in our downtowns by streamlining, I'm going to say, the environmental review that Act 250 would take on developments in those areas, it's really important to realize that Act 250 is not an economic development tool. Act 250 is intended to protect our environment while we have a vibrant economy. And what we need to do as a legislature and is put together viable economic development plans for the regions of the state that are in need of those that are separate from the regulatory process. Act 250 has not slowed down economic development in Chittenden County. It is, and so removing jurisdiction in our in other areas is not the answer to economic development woes. So, yeah, they all work sort of hand in glove. And that's a big part of what our charge has been, is to figure out in the changed landscape, what is the role of Act 250?
Let's go to John in Johnson. Hi, John. What are you thinking about?
Hi. My comment is about these properties, you know, that when they're up for a permit, I believe they should be that land should be posted, especially in small towns. I'm speaking particularly of one here in Johnson where Maplesfield went up. They applied for it in the wintertime. I believe that I looked into it because I didn't care for the situation, but I believe it was a 30-day appeal process. They do this in the winter, and before you know it, people, you know, they're going back and forth to work and to school. They never see anything going on, and all of a sudden, boom, you know, the backhoe's in there and changing this place. You know,
So, John, you'd like to see a way for the public to have greater notice of something like this happening so you could get involved?
Absolutely. You know,
so, Amy Sheldon, what about that? Is that a possibility for for the public to have more say or more advance notice? I mean, John's saying in the case that he's talking about, he just didn't even know about it until it was too late.
Right. So that's a great suggestion, actually. And usually when you get a town permit, there is a notice that something's going to happen, but that's probably after the permit happens. So I appreciate that. And I think that that's something pretty simple that we could suggest and make a change towards a physical post is what I'm hearing John ask for, because he's maybe not an abutting or joining neighbor and didn't get notice that the development was going to happen, but he cares and wishes to have advance notice.
So, Representative Sheldon, you mentioned earlier that you're in the writing up process now. You're still getting comments from the public, still welcoming them, but writing up some recommendations. And I think they're due on December 15th, right?
They are due on December 15th.
So what happens? I mean, you must be close then, but what happens once you've put out these recommendations?
Well, we take it back to the legislature when the session starts on January the 9th. And we may get to a place where we would have proposed legislation. But at this point, the charge was so large for us. We're really moving in right now on what are our priorities? Where can we put our effort? We have three more meetings. And what's the deliverable that we can make the most effect on with our charge by December 15th? So I imagine folks would be able to pick up our report and propose legislation from there.
So, and there's no requirement that the legislature has to act. These are recommendations that'll go forward, and then it's up to the legislature to pick them up and the governor to say, you know, where he stands on this as well.
That's right. Although it is the most amended section of statute, so I anticipate that we will probably have legislation coming forward.
Good. Well, you'll have plenty to do then all spring. Amy Sheldon is Middlebury State Representative and Chair of the Commission on Act 250. Again, we'll put a link up at vpr.net. You can click on Vermont Edition if you would like to submit your comments and thoughts on revamping and changing Act 250. Representative Sheldon, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.